Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Podcast time.
It is. This week, in honor of Black Friday having recently come and gone, we will be discussing customer horror stories.
And all their extant horrors.
And perhaps some helpful tips and tricks to make you a better shopper this holiday season.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's pretty easy, but sure. Don't do any of what I'm about to talk about.
Such as?
I mean, we had, like, more normal-ish ones. Well, not normal, or they wouldn't be the feature of today's topic, but... There was a couple that bought a pair of axes, and they awkwardly looked at each other, forced a laugh, and said, "If you hear about any double murders later this week, it'll be us." And I laughed along, and they laughed, but the laugh was so stilted and unpleasant. And they just kept looking at each other shiftily, that it always stuck out in my head as like, oh, they might actually kill each other, I think, for real. They didn't. I checked the news for a while, making sure that they hadn't carried that particular threat out. There was, the more recent, I think this was just last year, back during my Halloween time festivities of labeling arbitrary objects haunted, a woman came in looking specifically for haunted dolls. And she thought that one of the dolls I'd labeled as haunted was haunted because I had perhaps foolishly labeled it haunted.
It's funny how that will influence people's opinion.
Well, I was living in a world where people didn't take haunted item labels at face value, but I guess that was an incorrect world to live in. But at the time, my coworker said, like, yeah, well, that one's not haunted, probably. That's kind of just a joke. But then did show her a doll that was more likely to be haunted in all of our collective estimation. This is the one that at one point had, like, just gone rocketing off a shelf.
What kind of doll?
It was a baby doll, a porcelain.
Just going, pshoo!
It was really creepy looking, as they sometimes are.
Often.
Very often. This one especially, this one managed to, like, rank in memory in terms of, like, creepy porcelain doll. And it had, like, tumbled off of a shelf, like, apropos of nothing. And so they showed her that one going, well, you know, we've had some problems with this one, maybe this. And she didn't buy it because it was too creepy.
Ma'am, you came here for a haunted doll.
I was thinking, like, you're in the wrong business. if that's what you're, if you do not like haunted items, if they're too scary, I guarantee a real ghost is going to be much scarier. on the topic of the paranormal, I did meet another paranormal researcher who had an interest in buying, like, a specific early electrical engine of ours for what I discerned at the end of 30 minutes of talking was almost strictly so he could create ghosts.
Sorry, what?
So he had this theory that this particular kind of engine was, like, a catalyst for paranormal activity, not the movies.
Based on...
What do you think? Other paranormal researchers making things up. No, he had something about the Bridgewater Triangle and how there was a company that specialized in making these engines before they became outmoded, and how that was possible that, like, the large amount of energy the specific electrical engine output created, like, rifts. And then he asked if he could make an offer on it. And I was like, well, sir, you just got done telling me about how it, in your opinion, might be the most dangerous item possible in terms of paranormal activity. And he said, oh yes, I know. And he was like, I want to see if it works. Like, you want to buy the ghost machine to make ghosts? That is what you would like to do. And he said, yes. And he did buy the ghost machine to make ghosts.
And that's why we have ghosts now.
And it's pretty much his fault. If you've seen a ghost after 2018, you can listen for his radio show and yell. I don't know if he actually met with any success. He didn't come back. Maybe he... Oh.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't think he never came back is necessarily proof that he failed in his mission.
I was gonna say, like, he never came back, which means he didn't make a ghost, but then I remembered that there's, like, one real surefire way to make a ghost.
I mean, you know.
Okay, but I do want, I know you have at least one story, and I'll never get tired of it.
Remind me.
The ivory guy.
I already told that one.
Tell it again. Some people haven't heard that episode.
So once upon a time, I was working in the antique store, and we had one glass case full of all of our whalebone and sperm whale teeth and other ivory artifacts. because we're on South Coast Massachusetts. Whaling's kind of all we have. And the city has never recovered from the death of the whaling industry. But customer came in and was looking very intently into the case full of ivory, which was locked. So, you know, people couldn't just walk off with it. And so I came up to him with my ring of employee keys. And I was like, sir, would you like a closer look at anything in the case? And he says, no, no, no. I'm looking for whale's teeth. And I look from his face to the glass case full of whale's teeth he is staring directly at. And I say, well, you found them. And he said, no, 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 I'm looking for real whale's teeth. And I assured him these whale's teeth were in fact real. And he said, no, 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 I think these might be from Alaska. To which I replied, they have whales there. And it was at this point, he looked at me, and then without another word, turned and walked away and left the store.
And that man was?
Someone particularly notable in local politics and the local historical society, whom I didn't recognize because I don't, like, keep a goddamn picture yearbook.
He was the mayor!
It was not the mayor. I would have recognized the mayor.
It was the mayor's dad. And it was not
the mayor's dad because I know him. Him I know by sight. I know because he's constantly telling people not to bring the mayor's problems to him.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Oh,
it was some other elderly gentleman influential in local politics and local history, whose name to this day I don't know and who I probably wouldn't recognize again if I passed him on the street.
Which I'm sure devastates him.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah, I love that story.
But would you agree that they have whales in Alaska?
I am actually going to give that a hard yes. They are there.
And that the whales in Alaska are not any less verifiable than the whales in the Atlantic?
No, I have no evidence that suggests that the whales in Alaska are illusory.
They are perhaps even the same whales, given the penchant of whales for swimming merrily to and fro through the Arctic Circle.
They might be. Quite possibly, given that whales do in fact migrate.
Anyway.
Perhaps they were fraudulent whales.
I don't think they were. I don't think they were great whites with mustaches on saying, no, we're totally mammals, ignore the gills. I think they were just whales.
But as you know, the pilot whale is a dolphin. Would its teeth be of any value?
Dolphins are just small whales.
I think 17 taxonomists just exploded.
I mean, they're all fish anyway.
Now 30 taxonomists have exploded. You keep talking, all the taxonomists in the world are going to be dead and we won't know what's what.
Finally, we can start back from the beginning without any of this appearance-based family grouping.
Coconuts are mammals.
Oh, God.
I don't know about you, I had a ton of Karens. Is that what the kids are saying these days, Karens?
I really wish they wouldn't, because the only Karen I know is a lovely
woman.
Oh, you
have an aunt, yeah.
Yeah, she taught you how to ride a bike.
Well, she did. She tried.
She did her best.
Lord help her, she tried. I ended up losing a lot of skin on my knees, but it was inspiring. I have never ridden a bike since. No, there was a lady who wrote a negative review on us.
Ah, yes.
Like an extensive one. Because
on the Yelp?
On the Yelp. Because someone made, like, an incredibly bland joke in her general direction. She bought a gift card, and they were like, oh, how much is this gift card gonna be for? And jokingly said, $700? $800? And the woman huffed and said, no, $50. And that was weird, but, you know, sometimes people just aren't the joking types. So wrote it off until we saw the Yelp review, which went on at... And also complained to our boss at length about how she was made to feel cheap and insignificant, as if she were less of a customer, which is good.
Which is hilarious, considering the number of employees on government assistance due to low pay at that shop.
Yeah. I mean, the woman easily made more than I did.
It's like, yes, ma'am. I am absolutely looking down on you for spending only $50 at this antique store. Now, excuse me while I double check my food stamp balance.
It's good. It's good times. And, like, they immediately apologized, too. Just, like, the shift in tone was just like, oh, I'm sorry, it's just a joke. Didn't matter. Didn't matter, the damage had been done and had to go on Yelp. I think the other bad Yelp review was a woman who I bumped into. Like, I rounded a corner and, like, accidentally bumped into her shoulder. And, Lord, that woman shrieked. Like, she was trying to open the seventh fucking seal, like, with voice alone. And I was, like, panicking because I'm like, oh my god, maybe this woman has glass bones and paper skin. And I broke both those things. But she was just upset that I bumped into her. And so I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I was just a little clumsy, I guess. And I can't believe this kind of treatment, like how you treat your customers. And then, like, immediately left. And then within 2 days, a Yelp review about how we were, like, abusive and callous and unforgiving.
Look here, Bella Swan. Klutziness is no excuse for poor service.
It was awful service. And I deserved the dressing down. I mean, it's antiques. Honestly, like, 90% of customers were a variation on that theme. Although most of them were quite palatable. There was our old professor who swept in one day and asked where we kept the emeralds. And then proceeded to talk about different kinds of wood for, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours?
This was a sculpture professor at the local college who, if I remember correctly, specializes in building pie crimpers in unusual sizes and out of unusual materials, up to and including disassembling an entire vintage barn so he could build a giant pie crimper in a field.
That is, in fact, his specialty, yes. His teaching method includes teaching students to identify different woods blindfolded by scent.
He is a fascinating man, but frustrating to deal with when he bursts through the door of an antique shop and demands to see all of your sapphires.
If you're asking how he's still a professor, the answer is tenure. it was sapphires, thank you, yeah. Yeah, he just busted in the doors going, where do you keep your sapphires? I'm like, this is not the first time you've been here, Rick. And you know we don't have any. So, nowhere would be your answer. And then went on about, like, unrelated stuff for quite a while.
A fun break in a monotonous day.
He's always like that, always. He shows up, like, 3 times a week every week, and then just one day posits this, like, impossible question. Almost as if strictly to have asked it.
Listen, if I had an opportunity to kick down the door of an antique shop and with dramatic gestures announce my intention to rid them of all their sapphires.
I will be absconding with your sapphires this day.
Yes.
Yes. I liked him. He was fun. Thieves. I had a lot of thieves.
Oh, the thieves were fun.
The thieves were always the weirdest.
Well, it's because it's all, in my experience at least, it was all middle-class white women with may I see the manager hair who were very clearly using kleptomania to supplement their shopaholic nature.
Yeah, it was a lot of that. Like, a lot. And there was the lady who did it directly in front of me to the point where I think she would have gotten away with it, too, if it weren't for my meddling kid. I think she would have gotten away with it if I had just succumbed to my shock a little longer. Because, like, I watched her take something off the counter and stuff it in her purse. And then cash out with an entirely different, like, item. And we keep the lists itemized and attributed to personages. So it was, like, clearly not her thing. And she just did it. And I was, like, so stunned that I was just, like, I just didn't say anything. And she got through the transaction with a coworker. And right before she left, I was, like, it was so awkward. It was so awkward that I felt like I was intruding. That I pretended to not be able to find the thing on the person's order she'd stolen it from. And I said, oh, ma'am, I'm sorry to trouble you, but I think you may have grabbed an item by mistake. Perhaps a plate? And she was holding her items that she had purchased legally in a bag. She looked in her purse and pulled it out and goes, oh, yeah, I seem to have.
Oops.
And then, like, and it was just the whole time. I don't think my mouth closed once.
Was she the one that was, like, audibly clanking as she moved around the store, or was that a different one?
That was a different woman who was stealing plates. Same, like, honestly, if you put them in a lineup, I'd never be able to distinguish them because they were very can-I-talk-to-the-manager types. And, yeah, I was shadowing her because of the clanking. And, you know, did see her furtively, like, stuffing things in. Unfortunately, we couldn't use the gambit that time that, like, oh, I think you misplaced something. you know, like, oh, I noticed in my incredibly vast shop that a plate is missed. So we actually just had to get our much gruff, less socially awkward furniture guy to just be like, take the plates out. Like, take the plates out, give them back, and we won't talk about this any further.
Return your stolen property, and we will let the furniture guy go back to his furniture cave.
Yeah, yeah. And he used to be a bartender, so, you know.
He looks like he should be leading a bunch of other grizzled old men on Harleys.
I think he'd like that. Yeah, no, he's got the look, he's got the behavior, and he just does has the general doesn't give a shitness to get these things done where we are timid. I wish I could be that kind of person. Someday I think I will be, but at the time it just wasn't gonna happen. Quick question, what do you think the most commonly stolen item was?
Oh, I want to say plates because that's really funny to me, but I don't actually know.
They came up more often than even I would have guessed because it seems like a bad thing to steal.
Because it's noisy and fragile and difficultly shaped.
And generally cheap.
Also that. If you're stealing for the thrill of stealing, price doesn't usually come into it so much.
It was definitely for the thrill because the ungainliness and the sound were like, oh, I'm gonna get caught. So it had to be like for the like thrill of it. But what would you guess? Because it's not plates.
Costume jewelry?
That's a good guess and it ranks. But in my experience, personally, tops of salt and pepper shakers.
Just the tops.
Just the tops.
Are we sure this isn't just kleptomaniacs with pica desperately craving that mineral?
So there was a couple way all the way in the back to the very my very first humble beginnings as an antique person.
At age 14.
At age 13. 13 under the table, 14 officially. there was a couple that for the entirety of their lives from when I knew them to until one of them passed away, stole the tops of salt and pepper shakers almost religiously to the point where you had to be directly behind them to keep any salt and pepper shaker tops in stock. And at first, because like the first time anyone noticed it, it was a Sterling set. So we thought, scrappers. It didn't stop there though. And I think the best one was we had a large inter-community argument about whether or not we should let a dealer keep a fishbowl of stranded salt and pepper tops that had come in like auction boxes and stuff that they like labeled with the couple's name and said it's their special. And we were like, oh, we have to take that sign off.
Absolutely.
And other
not.
People were like, well, keep it up. They're thieves, so I don't think how they feel about the matter is important.
Yeah, no, I'm with the dealer on this. That's brilliant and should have been allowed to stand.
But they did occasionally drop good money because I'm sure it was actually kleptomania. So the boss was of the opinion that we shouldn't like divert their money. We did end up leaving it, and they oddly didn't notice. I think because the tops weren't affixed to a salt and pepper shaker.
It was the thrill of unscrewing?
Yeah, or maybe they noticed and you know, obviously didn't say anything, but they came back, so they must not have been as offended as everyone had worried. And that is just a lot of people. So many, many salt and pepper shakers lose their tops.
Why?
I can't. Maybe because it's a very easy target for someone who has kleptomania.
I guess, but there are other smaller things that are already lying around loose that you don't have to detach from other larger things.
And some of them are pretty.
Yeah.
Like you said costume jewelry, and of course that does go missing, oh, with regularity. But it's just not as regularly as salt and pepper shaker tops.
If you know why people are constantly fucking stealing salt and pepper shaker tops, email us at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com.
If you are stealing salt and pepper shaker tops,
stop.
Please stop. These are mom and pop shops. It's not Walmart. They don't have the fundage to absorb losses. And
also, theft is a crime.
I'm not going to comment on the morality of stealing from Walmart, but it is legally a crime and you're doing yourself a disservice by doing it. So consider stopping. Consider getting help if it's a pathological thing. And make a disposable email and tell us why.
Why have you done this?
You know, disposable email, very easy. We won't be able to find you. We won't try. Because I don't want to know. Really, at the end of the day, it's like my dad. It's my whole life. Yeah, I would love to know. Please, write in. Get help. Both those things. Not mutually exclusive. There was also the, full support to our local boys in blue necessary start to this one.
Oh boy.
We had like a huge, like a full scale heist. Like a guy came in and distracted us by like, he bought like a bunch of stuff, but it ended up being like $30 worth. And at that time, it was really heavy traffic, and his cohort had taken a tool crafted from a wire hanger and stolen a bunch of diamond jewelry out of a case.
Fuck.
And the guy gave us his number and address, the distraction man, who was on camera as coming in with the gentleman who was also on camera doing the stealing. Gave us his full name, his number, and his address. Both of those were his real number and address, as we'd later find out. Helpfully, when we realized what had happened, we told the cops. We said, "What luck? This man has given us his actual name, number, and address." His accomplice's mother, because the accomplice, one of the third guy who was helping doing the like actual heisting, was underage. And so the mother folded on the guy immediately.
Jesus.
Like, I think it was he was like the kid's uncle, like the woman's brother.
Yeah.
And she didn't want the kid to get in trouble. So she said, like, "Listen, this is him. You just focus on him. Like, yeah, he did it. He told me about it. So did, like, my son." And we said, like, "No, we have no interest in, your son didn't actually physically do anything. Maybe have a talking with him about not doing this. But yeah, like, that's fabulous. Thank you for this information. Like, we'll put you in touch with the police." She gave us her full name and number. We got it to the police. They said he didn't want to talk to them. So the investigation was going poorly.
Now, I'm not a doctor, but I do listen to an awful lot of My Favorite Murder. So perhaps I am overestimating the ability of the police to legally and lawfully make people talk to them, regardless of whether or not the people want to talk to them.
With a corroborating witness, I'm sorry, a corroborating accomplice, and video of it happening physically. A good video where he's easily physically identifiable. And they said, "Well, he doesn't want to talk to us, so we really don't know what to do." I said, "Sir, I am no lawyer. I am no cop. I think I know what to do. Arrest him?" And we can move. I don't know if maybe, which, like, and again, any transparency would have been helpful. If it was because the damages didn't go up, it was high, but it didn't quite crest 1,000. And I know with car accidents, it has to, with a lot of things, it has to feel 1,000 before the cops are legally obligated to do anything about it. So I don't know, but it would have been great if they'd said that to us. We had assumed that 700 was enough of a money exchange for them to consider, like, these people are a public menace and nothing needs to be done. Also, we'd like our stuff back.
Yeah, it's very much enough for any small business to take a significant hit is $700.
And also just knowing that those guys are out there, like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like, these are not small-scale thieves.
Like, if this individual heist is 700, who knows how many other businesses they're hitting.
Yeah.
For equal amounts.
So it wasn't even just, and also we would have liked our stuff back, and if they'd moved quickly enough, we would have gotten it.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult to fence jewelry. A lot of pawnbrokers won't take it. It got fenced, of course, because it took them upwards of a couple of months, and by the time they got anywhere, the guy was already in jail on another offense, and they just dropped it.
Cool work.
It was like the Cape police that ended up getting him, because he lived down the Cape. And I was just like, well, it's good to know they could get him on theft. I wonder what they did about it. Perhaps you could talk. Something tells me they didn't let him hang up on them. I know it's a tough job, but could have done better.
I mean, you know. I thought you were going to talk about the burglary where a guy just straight up crawled in through a window and sacked the place and crawled out.
Well, that was less of a weird of a bad customer because, man, did they ever avoid ever being a customer. Yeah, that did happen. And it was very bad. Oh, that was,
that was several antique stores in the city being hit in the same day.
That one I actually didn't even give the cops shit about because, like, genuinely baffling. I totally understand how they didn't know what had happened. And if the stuff got fenced, it sure as sugar didn't happen in the city. Because that was, like, so high profile that everyone was on high alert. Moral, we had a pretty comprehensive list of what had been taken.
Ivory?
Ivory, Lalique pieces. It was primarily ivory. And a couple other nautical bits. And, like, some jewelry that you would look at and definitely think was worth something. So, like, amateur hour stuff. Like, it was all stuff that you would know kind of at a glance was important. Also, we have price tags, so that helps. But yeah, it was in the span of a single night, 3 antique stores. Absolutely no, what is it, forcible entry?
Well, not at yours.
No, there was at the other, at one. There was one at one.
At the antique store. I worked at.
Yeah, there was signs of forced entry. They broke the door, right?
Broke the glass doors that apparently had no alarm to them.
They did not.
So they smashed those in, and then they smashed up all the jewelry cases and ransacked them naturally. And so as I walked in with other employees to open up the store the next morning, I said, "Hey, this place has been ransacked. Consider police?" Yes. So the police were in fact called. Meanwhile, the owner of the store came down to assess the damage and wanted to know why the doors were still locked and why there were customers waiting outside that we hadn't let in yet. And we tried to explain to him that this was an active crime scene and the police had not yet arrived. He yada yada yadded that away and said we should open up for the customers who were waiting.
And then did.
Then he did open up for the customers who were waiting. And then when the police did finally arrive, they looked at the remnants of the crime scene because the boss had also demanded we sweep up all the broken glass and so on and so forth. They looked around and said, "Well, there's literally nothing we can do with this. Good job. Goodbye. We're going to the other two smarter antique stores in the city that were also hit."
Yeah. Yeah. And those, both of those, no signs of forced entry. To this day, the one I worked at, we can only guess. And when I say we, this includes the police, could only guess at how they got in. And it was an air vent that they had somehow shoved either a child or a very small person through. And it was much the same at the other place. And that one was, we lost less in general because our alarms were active and responded to. So they had, but the amount they got done in that span of time was incredible. And like both places, active alarms, and I suppose that limited how much got taken, but it was a lot, quite a bit. Altogether, definitely over the $1,000 mark. And they never figured out a single goddamned thing about it, ever.
How mysterious. And not to be extremely predictable on Maine, but the shoving a small child through an air vent to steal things is extremely Oliver Twist.
It's so Dickensian, and like, I think that's what we're having trouble. The cops didn't even entertain the idea, because we were all trying to work together to figure out how it had happened, because again, no signs of forced entry in an alarmed building. And that's when we finally got the only vent big enough is this air vent up there. But it does lead, it is direct from the roof to here, but it's very small. And the cops were like, "That, no." But eventually, combined with the other place, they were like, "I guess, yeah, that seems, what, Occam's razor, right?"
Oh, man. But yes, technically none of these people were customers that we know of.
Well, yeah, no, not those. But it still sucked.
So our first piece of advice this holiday season is don't steal.
It's a good one. I like that advice. Don't steal. And if you have to, make sure it's a large corporation.
D.
If you have to.
Listen, on the one hand, bread and roses. On the other hand, I don't feel like anyone needs to steal an antique.
Yeah. No, well, that's why I said if you have to steal anything, it's got to be from a big corporation.
But don't steal.
Yeah, okay. Sure. No, it's fine.
So about David Duchovny.
Oh my god, David Duchovny. I didn't even think of that.
How did you not think of that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. So I met David Duchovny. I didn't meet him. I didn't realize it was him until after he'd walked out because I yelled at him.
Not from the beginning, from the top.
So David Duchovny, I don't know if I should be saying this. She still lives in the area.
I don't give a shit.
She
can come to my goddamn house if she has a problem.
Well, there was a famous person who was very close to David Duchovny.
Married to him, some might say.
Some might say.
As in his legal wife.
A bond similar to marriage in every way. And she shopped there pretty regularly, like a lot. And, you know, we all knew that she was David Duchovny's wife. And of course it was like, sometimes it was like everyone giggle, the checks that had his name on it. And she was fine.
It's so convincing when you say it like that.
She never remembered my name, which like is a unique name. And also she met me we worked together pretty closely. And her mother knew my name, who was a sweet, wonderful woman.
Is this also the woman who would get very upset if you didn't recognize her?
Mm-hmm.
Like if strangers looked at her and did not immediately know who she was because she was so famous?
Yeah.
Star of Spanglish?
I didn't have that much of that experience because most of my time was spent trying to wrangle people from harassing her. But yeah, I guess maybe I shouldn't have. The only attempt she made at remembering my name was Denmark.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a legit name that a person might have, for sure.
Like, I guess to her credit, she also tried, like, a couple that I get pretty often. So that, you know, but Denmark stuck out because it's not a name for anything but a country. But anyway, so she bought a piece of furniture, and we moved it all to the front to help move it into the car. And a man came in, just very casual, hoodie, had, like, a beanie on, it was cold. And started dragging one of the pieces of furniture out.
Dragging a table out.
Like, half, which is
not, hey, fun fact, that is not how you move a table. That's especially not how you move an antique table that has just barely hung on throughout the centuries and should not be put under any undue strain or stress. It's joints. Do not drag antique furniture anywhere. Thank you. Good night.
Yes, this has been a pro tip. How the pros do it. What we don't do, drag tables around.
These are our holiday shopping tips. Don't steal and don't drag anything.
Man, we're just... I know it's going to be tough to follow.
But take notes.
I hope we're making it simple. So yeah, I was dragging this table and I had... I mean, there's really not like an excuse for that kind of behavior.
You had a bad day.
It was a long day and we'd already been there like an extra half hour to accommodate this exact trip, this exact shopping experience that they were having.
Mm-hmm.
Because they could drop some dosh, for real. But so, you know, long freaking day. I'm so tired. I'm seeing this, and instead of, hey, we got someone coming to help you with that, I said, what are you doing? Stop that! In an incredibly unfriendly tone.
You yelled.
I yelled. And the man looked up at me, smiled sheepishly, and picked up the table bodily, as one should have,
yes.
And walked out the door. And it occurred to me, I think maybe actually like a whole 20 minutes later, that, you know, I was just like, huh. He looked familiar.
Yeah.
It was David Duchovny.
Yeah, I fucking bet he looked familiar. And I had,
in fact, yelled at David Duchovny.
Good job.
Good job. So yes, I yelled at David Duchovny. David Duchovny, if you're listening, I'm so sorry.
But also, don't drag tables.
Also, I hope you learned your lesson. Normally, the celebrity interactions were not contentious like that.
Normally.
A lot of it was getting my coworkers to not harass people. It was like one of the stars of The Cosby Show came in, and Bruce Willis's daughter, I can't remember her first name, but here's the thing, she looks like she is a Willis child.
Yes.
And we take ID, and it said Willis, and like, one of our coworkers didn't realize it, because they hadn't taken the ID, and I was keeping hush because I didn't want this person to get harassed. And she said, has anyone ever told you you look like Bruce Willis?
Oh, no.
And I hadn't seen the ID yet. And I turned to her and I'm like, you shouldn't have said that. That's an awful thing to say. Well, like, the secret to that is that I'm face blind. So, like, the familial connection didn't sink in for me until I looked at the ID and made it. So what I heard was a woman comparing a girl to a bald man. And I thought, that doesn't seem... I wouldn't want to be compared wholesale to Bruce Willis. When in reality, what my coworker was seeing was a familial resemblance into what is otherwise a very beautiful woman. And Bruce Willis is a handsome man. So I misinterpreted the situation horribly, and it was, in fact, Bruce Willis' daughter. Who, it turns out, is actually a big fan of vintage items, as she's been seen and welcomed in a lot of local businesses.
Yeah.
So that's how that happened.
You have brought back to the forefront of my mind my one and only celebrity encounter in antiques.
Yes, yes!
Which, again, probably wouldn't have happened to anyone capable of reading a room. Or, like, interpreting body language or taking hints.
And in that, it was the most perfect encounter.
Because a gentleman walked into our antique store, and he looked wrong. And it took me a while to pin down what exactly was wrong about him, because he was very clean cut, standard brown-haired white man, and wearing normal clothes like trousers, a button-down shirt, shoes. So far, reading extremely normal. But something was extremely wrong, and I kind of gawked at him for a minute, and then I realized, as I stared at him, he had no pores. He looked like a living Photoshop, or like an alien that had draped itself in a semblance of human skin, but had forgotten one very important detail, which was pores. And so I'm like, okay, that's weird. And so I'm watching this gentleman as I watch all customers, because watching customers was my job because of the aforementioned thieves. I watch this gentleman move through the store, and he's a little, again, moving much like an alien who is not quite used to encountering this environment. And eventually he selects a bronze quail statue, like fist size, and he brings it up to the desks, brings up to the front desk and asks me if I can hold it for him while he shops, which is a service we offer. We have a series of cubbies behind the desk, and when people come up as customers, we ask them for their first name or some other identifying moniker, so we can write that on a little paper tag on the cubby hole and put all their items in the cubby to keep them from getting mixed up with other people's items. It's a simple system that is usually effective. So I told this gentleman, yes, I just need your name. Which alarmed him greatly. My name, he says, and I say, yep, just your name. Apparently well used to dealing with the Fae, this gentleman refused to give his name. He looked at me, looked at the quail, looked at me, and then, with a very odd gesture, as if he wished to protect the quail from my corrosive influence, he clutched it to himself and said, no. No, I don't think I will. And as he moved throughout the shop for the rest of his shopping experience, he kind of clutched the quail to him as he went about, again, moving as if an alien encountering an unfamiliar planet. So here's the thing. This man is obviously paranoid. And I'm in South Coast, Massachusetts, so my immediate assumption is drug dealer.
Rough.
But this combined with the no pores thing makes me very concerned. So now I am fully attention on this gentleman. And eventually he selects several other items, manages to juggle them up to the front counter, and cashes out. And his method of payment is credit card.
You would think someone that secretive would have had cash.
Here's the thing about credit cards is that they have your full name printed on them.
Sure do.
Your full legal wallet name is complete upon your credit card and easily visible to the employee swiping it into the system. It was also a black metal card with a beveled edge.
Now, if you don't know about black cards, and actually to a lesser extent like the sapphire cards, mostly black and gold cards, they have an incredibly high spending limit, which is only awarded to people who already have a lot of money. Like, a lot. I believe you have to have a minimum account for a black card of $50,000.
Something like that. Which is not helping my assumption of drug dealer at all.
No.
So, this man hands me his full legal name, and I'm like, okay, buddy, sure. And normally, I don't really look at or remember customer names on credit cards, because I wasn't paid enough to give a shit. But this man had walked into my store with no pores and a refusal to reveal his name to the Fae.
The audacity.
So, now I'm thinking I might need to remember this later for perhaps the FBI. So I do take note of the name on the card, which I do not on sight recognize.
Which is wild. I gotta slam you right there. That's weird.
But I do remember it enough to, as soon as he leaves the store, desperately type it into Google, where he appears, his beautiful poreless self, attached to a high-profile Bollywood star at several influential galas of the rich and famous. And as I scroll through some tabloid nonsense, I realize this man is heir to the Hermes fortune.
You know, Hermes, the multi-billion dollar fashion icon, Hermes.
That I still can't pronounce, and the name I only recognized because my years in the antique shop were the years I spent obsessively rereading The Devil Wears Prada over and over again, because in my boutique retail food stamp state, I related very strongly to a character taken advantage of by luxury goods as, you know, what's the word? Not company, not commerce. Industry.
Industry.
Thank you. Yes.
It's just that not a lot of people are named Hermes, Ken.
Honestly?
The fact that on site you weren't like,
listen, okay.
Even if you didn't immediately link it to the business, you weren't like, this is someone I should have known because this is a Buck Wild last name to have.
There are five people, at least, in the world with the last name Hermes.
And all of them are related to the company.
But to date, he is the only living human I have seen with no pores.
Yeah, because he can afford to have the microderma braided off.
Which is insane!
I don't know why people do it. I don't like the look, but
Yeah, it is genuinely unsettling. You know how when, like, in HD movie releases, they do a bad job of scrubbing off the actor's face from frame to frame? It looked like that.
I'm thinking of the CG-ing of young Jack Sparrow in the last Pirates of the Caribbean.
Or, like, when they had to take Superman's mustache off in reshoots.
Oh my god, yeah, he was Henry Cavill's upper lip.
Yes, but his whole body was that.
Whew.
So
it was just the fact that you didn't know.
Listen.
Like I said, that last name immediately, like, I already knew who Hermes was, but, like, that last name would have made me go, like, oh, this has got to be someone I should know about.
So our third tip for the holiday shopping season is, if you want to go undercover, consider paying in cash, or in some other method that does not have your full name literally engraved upon it.
I guess, like, practically speaking, okay, two theories. You are of the Fae. He saw this in your eyes. And he said, this man, he will do something nefarious and tricksterly.
If I give him my full name. I mean, true, but still.
So either he clocked you, or he was, it's still bad planning, but maybe he was like, well, at least I'll be making an egress by the time they see my name. Because, like, right. I don't know if maybe he was having, like, a moment of semi-to-unwarranted self-importance.
Right, but if you don't want to be stared at in public, consider having pores.
What, wasn't he dressed rather unusually, too?
Well, I mean, we were in the south end of New Bedford, so it was more sweatshirt country rather than a button-down country, but we did occasionally have, you know, our can-we-see-the-manager Connecticut types.
Yeah, but well, apparently this doesn't apply to you. So, in my experience, big money has a look to it. Like, even the clothes that are supposed to be normal-looking look different on, like, when they're rich people clothes, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, because they're the
labels.
Labels, and also the only people wearing white pants or Nantucket Reds.
Yeah, yeah.
Boat shoes.
But it can be
boat
difficult.
Boat shoes, another big toe.
It can be difficult getting the normie rich people away from, like, the high-profile rich people.
But also, if he was that paranoid, what the fuck was he doing even setting foot in the south end of New Bedford? Where the guy they hired to replace me after I left the shop literally got mugged, like, on his break from work.
Yeah. Well, I know why he was there. So, where we're at has a really strong reputation for antiques.
Yes, but there are other antique stores in the city that aren't in the South End.
Yeah.
Where, again, an employee literally got mugged.
I hope he made it to, like, the good one. But, like...
If what he was seeking was a normal customer service interaction... I do not think the good antique store was going to help him out in that regard, because...
No. But maybe it would be refreshing to be treated like one of the little people. Because they would. No,
A shop where every employee is me telling people there are whales in Alaska.
And not half as kindly.
It's a wonderful store, and I'd love to visit someday.
It's a fantastic store.
But their Yelp reviews are a laugh riot.
They are something. And because all of them have the caveat of wonderful store, beautiful, fine merchandise. Oh my god, they called me names. It's like everyone has to admit it's a wonderful antique store.
Because it genuinely is.
But they are horrible, frightening people.
They're not. They are... people who take absolutely no shit.
God take tender mercy on your soul if you think you are going to be there a second past closing time. They have a baton. Like, they will get you out. And they also firmly believe in having 10 minutes to close down the shop, and they adhere to it.
They also don't go outside for their smoke breaks.
They do not feel the need. It is their business with this. They actually still hold over from the quote-unquote good old days. They actually have a smoking corner. So they are, like, very incensed if you're... Well, you know, because they're in the smoking corner. Why are you complaining?
It is the fully vintage experience.
Yeah, it's just like this... It hasn't been the 60s for a very long time. Because back in the day, the smoking corner was considered polite. Like, oh,
yeah.
We've
moved to the corner to smoke.
Yeah, like, what are you complaining about? It's just...
Oh man.
And it just, I like, sometimes I imagine the delightful shock in the vape age of walking in and seeing someone with just a Marlboro in their mouth. So what bothers me about the Hermes story is, like,
me.
No, that's very funny. And I'm glad that you, of all people, happened to him. Because you must have been, like, you must have seemed very conniving to him, which is very funny.
I am something of a customer service natural disaster, in a way.
Oh, you're a natural, all right. But if I remember correctly, his first name wasn't especially remarkable.
No.
So it blows my mind that he didn't give that. Like,
I guess they just don't do names in France.
God.
I guess names just aren't a thing they have.
No one has names in France. Unless you're Hermes, in which case you are apparently obligated to give it if someone asks for your name.
And there was, okay, now that we are on this subject, I am remembering more horror stories from customers, mostly to do with haggling.
Every fucking time.
Which might just be because I personally hate haggling and I do not understand it as a concept. Why do we have a price sticker if it's just a lie, a horrible lie?
It's not a lie, it's a suggestion.
Lies. But there was one particularly egregious example of haggling, which was when a customer brought up to, I'm gonna say garbage paperbacks, but book lovers, please understand, I truly believe no book is garbage, but these paperbacks were priced $1 each for a reason. So she brings up these paperbacks and asks me how much they are. I proudly inform her, you are in luck. These are $1 paperbacks. They are $1 a piece. You will spend no more than $3 this transaction. And she says, can you do better?
Than you? Certainly.
Yeah, that was the reaction I barely kept inside. What I actually said was, no, we won't be going lower than $1 per book. Especially when you're only taking away three of the damn things and not, like, a crate. I would have considered calling the dealer for a crate. But this I can do nothing for you. Good day.
Oh, and how did she feel about that? Did she buy it?
She got really huffy and looked at her boyfriend as if she expected him to do anything about it. He, of course, could do nothing because they were faced with me, the natural disaster of human resources.
Beat this guy up for me.
Demand this fey creature give us these paperbacks for 50 cents.
This fey is trying to swindle me with his tricks.
Don't give him your name. Never give him your name.
Never give him your name. He might not have any idea who you are. Imagine being that standoffish to the one person guaranteed not to recognize it. I'm sorry to go back to it. I love that story because if he had just given you the name, you probably would have never figured it out.
No, if he had just acted normal, if he could have just been cool for 5 seconds, I would have said, I saw a man with no pores today, and then no one would have believed me, and we could have all moved on with our lives.
I would have believed you. I've seen plenty of plastic work.
Instead, no. Instead, this.
Also, how many alien sightings do you think he's solely responsible for?
All of them. He is responsible for every sighting of Grays.
You had a psychic too, right?
No.
Was that you? Yeah, you were there. That was when we worked together.
Okay.
The woman who came in and said that the place had, and I quote, hellacious vibes, and then bought like a rocking chair and said that she had connected with the spirit in it. And those were my favorite because, like, the rule of customer service is, for as long as they're talking about it, you are also into it.
Listen, they have something of a magnetic quality about them.
Yeah.
It is very easy to believe in the paranormal around paranormal investigators.
Well,
it is very easy to believe in vibes around a psychic.
It's never really been my experience. My golden rule is, I am passionate about that subject for the duration of this conversation. And it served me well. Which I love doing because then I get to say, like, who is it? Which I, like, it's a chair. So that's cool. But yeah, I really loved the phrase hellacious vibes to describe an antique store.
That's what we'll be naming our shop when we open it.
Oh, I would love that. I also made, like, a couple of flippant remarks that, where I was just like, it must be really tough being psychic and coming into a place like this. Less flippant, apparently, just is than I thought, but yeah.
And yet, still she soldiers on, doing her work.
Getting those hellacious vibes out. And bringing the good vibes in.
Oh, man. Any final thoughts? Final prayers? Final customers?
Yeah, I think that's it. Well, I mean, it's definitely not it, but those are my favorites.
One more.
Okay, alright, yeah.
Once upon a time, there was a vintage toy in a glass case. This toy was in its original box and had been produced sometime in the mid-1950s and very clearly made in China. You could tell because it had made in China written both on the box and on the toy itself. A little metal wind-up thing. Gentleman asked me to open the case so he could look at it. I do so. I hand it over to him. He says, I think this is made in China. I assure him, this was made in China. He says, I'll know for sure if I can just see the maker's mark. I said, sir, it's written on the box and also on the toy. He ignored both of these signs and looked all over the toy for some other indiscernible smear, sludge, thing, slur upon this toy. And eventually, apparently finding the secret key that he wanted, he triumphantly showed me, see, this was in fact made in China.
I know exactly which toy you're talking about, and like, yeah.
Yeah, dog.
Dog.
Yeah, my dude.
Okay.
Listen, I understand that I work boutique retail, but I'm not actually illiterate.
I do have a similar one, if you'll indulge me. Well, that was the guy was looking at a knife, dagger, properly. And he was like, oh, I it's cool. I don't know what it is. I said, it's a Nepalese, not like a kukri, but a knife.
Yes.
And he was like, oh, what's that? And I said, well, it's a specific style of knife from Nepal. He turned it over for just a very long time. And I was curious. So I was like, oh, what are you looking for on there? I said, well, looking for a marking to tell me where it comes from.
If only there was some kind of sign,
someone had said...
If only someone knew where
the country of origin.
Speaking of country of origin.
Yeah?
So one time, customer brings up this large brass horn and wants to know if they can get a better price on it or if we have any more information on it. For this, because we are in an antiques mall, I have to call the dealer who is not in the building. So I call the dealer... Get her on the phone. I'm like, so what's up with this horn? And she's like, well, you know, it's very, you know, very special horn. We think it comes from someplace with lots of green rolling hills. And I'm like, well, that's everywhere. And she's like, we're thinking like maybe Ireland. I'm like, okay, Ireland. She's like, or the Alps. And I'm like, well, I guess those are both in Europe. And then she says, or Tibet.
Now, is she confused with the nature of mountains?
No. So, I'm like, okay, thank you for clarifying. And so I hang up on her and I turn to the customer and I'm like, well, she believes it came from a place with green rolling hills, such as Ireland, the Alps, or Tibet. And because I'm me and I am incapable of altering the natural tone of my voice... I said that with just as much skepticism to that customer as I did into this microphone just now.
Yeah.
And the customer's face was awash with absolute delight. And she said, that's fascinating. I'll take it.
Imagine being told, well, conceivably anywhere in the world save the Americas. And someone going, fantastic. This level of obscurity pleases me.
The end. Sources for this episode include 15 years in the antiques industry.
Yeah. We were there. We were there, Gandalf!
If you would like to tell us your antiques horror stories, email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com or hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, and while you're there, join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
Where you can confer with some other people about their antiques horror stories.
If you would like to purchase some vintage goods, we have an Etsy shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks.
It's online, so I can't be smoking when I sell it to you.
And you won't have to deal with my customer service nightmare. If you would like to listen to deleted scenes, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks. And while you're there, you can join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
And like clockwork it is. If a clock only ran once a month.
So a calendar.
Like a calendar.
What you're describing.
Which we use is to send out.
What you are describing is, in fact, a calendar.
Listen. Shut up. Nightmare Antiques Interaction, my friend, right now.
And while we have you on the horn, we would like to ask you to leave a review in whatever podcast app you are using to listen to this podcast.
Whatever review you think we deserve, any kind of review helps us get the word out and gets our voices in other people's ears.
My most recent favorite review is 5 stars, titled, Write a Review, I Hardly Know Her. Extremely good.
Thank you. I am flattered that someone wrote, like, I'm pretty sure we had that discussion where that's my favorite joke.
We've several times.
Yeah, yeah.
We have made that joke at least once per episode.
I just love that anyone cared.
So thank you to everyone who has reviewed, and thank you to our patrons for supporting this podcast financially, paying our hosting fees, and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes.
And helping us get stuff that's coming in. We're gonna hopefully up the audio quality.
Two microphones! One microphone per host!
Yeah, so that's happening. And that it couldn't happen without you, so thank you so much.
And thank you for listening.
Especially you.
Goodbye!
Bye.